KRLV Las Vegas. Now, time for the official Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Arnish on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM.
Down towards the near corner, Cody Eakin goes in shorthanded, feeds in front, score! It's Carlson! William Carlson shorthanded. Miller, right point shot, score! Tipped out in front, and it's 4-0 Vegas. Here comes Lindbergh, going to get ahead of the defense. He pulls it away, goes circle, he shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! Now a breakaway, here's David Perron, all by himself, the righty down the middle, fakes, backhand score! David Perron, 1-0 Vegas! Here's Hunt, setting up his man in front, Carrier, score! It's his first goal, William Carrier, 7-0 Vegas!
And welcome into the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a Monday. Clayton Hamilton sitting in for Frank Harnish along with Ryan, the hockey guy, Wallace. Fresh off a victory last night. Golden Knights over the Arizona Coyotes. Your final 3-2 in overtime. Jonathan Marchessault gets the puck to Riley Smith and everybody goes home happy.
Yeah, go figure that one. That connection. Smith to Marchessault, Marchessault to Smith. It really doesn't matter which way it goes. Would those two guys find space in open ice and three-on-three, they're dangerous, and they've proven it so far this season.
And that's what they were hoping for during the expansion draft, getting those two guys with some familiarity with each other down in Florida, and that's all coming to fruition.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, they got the trust and from their coach. Gerard Gallant knows that they can, that those two guys specifically can go out in any situation. He trusts that they're going to be on the right side of the puck and, you know, make plays, and that's what they came here to do. I asked Gerard Gallant today about Jonathan Marchessault, the player, and he glows whenever he talks about him. He said that he's taken advantage of every opportunity that's been put in front of him. And, you know, last year it was Jonathan Huberdeau getting hurt and a large role for Jonathan Marchessault. He scores 30 goals, and now he comes to this team, and he's looked at as more of a leader, and he's living up to that, absolutely.
And not just did Jonathan Marchessault have the primary assist on the goal in overtime, but he also had a goal earlier in the game as well, his 10th.
Yeah, and it was one of those plays where, you know, you look at Scott Wedgwood in the game that he put in for the Arizona Coyotes last night, and you say he was probably the only reason they were close, and it's, you're right on that. But the Marchessault goal was misplayed by Wedgwood. It was a soft floater from the point that got through, and I don't know if it just surprised him, but he kicked that rebound right out in the middle of the slot, and Jonathan Marchessault is a goal scorer. He likes to shoot the puck. He's able to find those soft parts of the ice where there's no coverage, and he found it in a perfect spot, and he made no mistake when he found it.
And it's nice to see putting mistakes away, because it's one thing for mistakes to happen. It's another for you to actually get to capitalize on it.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at the game up and down last night, and you say to yourself, this is a game that the Golden Knights probably could have scored 5, 6, 7 goals. I mean, they had that many opportunities. Unfortunately, they ran into a goalie that's been playing very well as of late. But, you know, those things are going to happen. They still found a way to get 2 points.
Got 2 points. They did indeed, up to 33 on the ledger. And it was an important win because the LA Kings continued to win their games. They're high atop the division in the Pacific.
Yeah, exactly. And you want to keep pace. You know, you want to keep pace with them, and that's what the Golden Knights did.
All right. We're going to talk about the leader of that that line, the assistant coach for the Vegas Golden Knights, Ryan Craig, who works a lot with all of the forwards, and we've got him on the line. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for making the time for us. It's good to see the boys out there on the ice today having a little fun, something you get to do when you win.
Yeah, no, we wanted to come out and get our legs going again with us playing again tomorrow, but I thought we had some good jump in our 30-minute practice, and we'll be ready to go tomorrow.
Ryan, in looking at constructing lines, when you kind of sit down with the players that you have and you try to figure out where they're going to fit and what they're going to do, where they're going to fit best, how do you construct maybe a top six line versus a bottom six line?
Well, I think part of it is you look for players that complement each other. There's some players want to have the puck all the time. Some players want to get the puck in the scoring areas and be able to shoot it right away. And other guys are guys that maybe go and hunt down pucks and grab pucks and hang on to it until those guys can come get it or stuff like that. And those are, you know, those are top six offensive role guys. And then, but in this day and age, you got to be able to play a 200-foot game. And I think for us, it doesn't matter what line you're on or how you number them. We know we don't necessarily number them. We want our players to be responsible defensively, but also use some creativity in the offensive zone.
When you look at the sort of uncalled top line, I know Gerard Gallant doesn't like to number his lines, but when you look at Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault, two guys that came in with some familiarity with each other, and you had to try and find a third piece that was going to make that click, and there was a number of guys that went through that. Vadim Shipachev and Oscar Lindberg were a couple of the guys that got a shot. It really all clicked with William Karlsson, and was he a guy when you came into camp that you sort of had your eyes on that maybe we're going to do something different with him than he had been used in the past, or did he work himself into that role?
Well, he deserves all the credit for working himself into that role and taking full advantage of being in that role. And yet, we had quite a few guys that had played center here when they came in. I had known Will a bit from the Columbus organization when he was traded there from Anaheim a few years ago. You know, you knew he was a smart player. You knew he was a guy that could skill and had maybe more to offer with a bigger role than he had in Columbus. And I think that he was able to come in here and you know, he continued to work hard and was given an opportunity to play with two real smart players, guys that see the ice real well and similar to him in Smitty and Marchie, and has taken full advantage of being in the right place at the right time.
And, you know, in looking at William Karlsson, and obviously the last stretch that he's been on has been phenomenal, but you look at a guy like Oscar Lindberg, and he's kind of bounced up and down, in and out, all that kind of stuff. Where do you see him fitting best on this team? What would you like to see from him moving forward as far as consistent line mates?
Well, it's been a bit of a, you know, we have different injuries and different spots, and he's obviously played in different positions. And in different groups and also different roles. So for him, he's been a bit of a utility guy for us, and that doesn't go unnoticed from his teammates and from the staff. And yet I think when Lindy's playing his best hockey, he's moving his feet, he's taking pucks to the net, he's really responsible defensively and just playing a simple North game. And I think that's something he'll continue to work on, and we're happy to help him get back to playing that game. But he hasn't disappointed us in his play. He's been a real useful piece of our forward group.
And we've seen with injuries, as they always do, necessitate some shuffling in the lines. Could you take our audience sort of behind the scenes of what goes on with you guys as a coaching staff and players when there is a shakeup in the lines? What does that do to your scouting sessions, to your video sessions, to your off-ice prep? How does that change when there's going to be a major shift in line mates?
Well, there's times that it happens during a game on the bench. There's times that it happens in between periods in a game. And then there's times that it happens, you know, the mornings when we come in and discuss lineup and putting it together. There can be different circumstances such as injuries that lead to a shuffle. There could be merit of play and where the amount of ice time that will be given, and also just trying to mix it up and see get certain people going. So there's a lot that goes into it, but when it does happen, it's basically relayed to the players and they go. I mean, whether it's moving from right wing to left wing or to a center, these players have all, we're not putting in anyone in a position they haven't necessarily played. So it's just a matter of getting familiar with some line mates, and they've all been now with each other for 4 months to where they know each other's games a little bit. Obviously, a guy like Will Carrier plays different than somebody like Jonathan Marchessault, so maybe you would play a little bit different style with them if you were playing with them. But for the most part, our team game is about playing fast, playing on the inside and playing direct hockey, and that's what we want for not only our forward group but our defensemen as well.
One of those changes that happened a little bit earlier in the season was moving Eric Haula up to play with David Perron and James Neal. And what does Eric Haula bring to that line that was different than, say, Cody Egan?
Well, I think they're both fast players, and yet they're both guys that have a little bit of a different skill set. Both are skilled, and yet skilled in their own ways. I think Eakes has really been good for Alex Tuck on the right side, and then the guys that have come through there with Brendan Leipzig being there lately, and really settled into that role as a penalty killer, one of the leaders of that kind of group. And Eric Haula, who plays special teams power play for us, has found a home with, before he got hurt, David Perron and James Neal. And I think he brought the speed, and he likes to skate the puck through the neutral zone with those guys, and he can drive the middle lane and open up space for those guys to handle the puck once they get to the blue line and make plays.
One of the guys that you had mentioned is Alex Tuck, and he's a player that we've been enamored with. The Vegas crowd is starting to become enamored with him as well. We're starting to see more and more Tuck merchandise throughout the T-Mobile arena. With his work ethic and the skill set of where he is right now, how good can Alex Tuck be?
Well, Alex Tuck has a very high ceiling. He's I think sometimes we forget that he's 21 years old, 22 years old. He could still be, you know, a second year in college and playing against college kids, and he's playing in the pros and having success with his size and strength and the speed and the skating ability that he brings. And for us, it's just about developing Alex's all-around game and trying to push him every day and just be focused on that day and getting better that day and, you know, continuing to learn how to play in the National Hockey League and not just play in the National Hockey League, but to have success in the National Hockey League. And he's for him, that's taking pucks to the net, playing below the hash marks, but also using his speed to end plays defensively and take pucks and go the other way.
And talking about Alex Tuck, I think the reason why a lot of the fans gravitate toward him is because he's very noticeable on the ice. He's noticeable when he's going in on the forecheck, when he's trying to make a play. But what are some of the things he's doing or some of the things that you guys are focused with him away from the puck that will turn him into a very good, consistent NHL player?
Well, obviously, for most young players, the defensive zone and the coverage is something that continues to be developed. He's done a good job. We want him to recognize plays. We want him to close quickly, strike quickly in the D zone, especially on his point coverage and getting in lanes and stuff like that, and just being in the right position. I mean, because he's so big in his reach and the way that he skates, he's able to get away with some things maybe at some point. And if we can continue to work at his game and polish it, like I said, a 200-foot game and be the all-round player that can play in all situations, Alex is going to reap the benefits, but also the Vegas Golden Knights are really going to reap the benefits of him continuing to get better.
Golden Knights assistant coach Ryan Craig joining us here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. And Ryan, when you look at that line that's been Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, Will Carrier, Tomáš Nosek, they seem to have had a lot of success. And we've noticed the way that Coach Gallant likes to use them right at the end of a power play situation or right at the end of a penalty kill situation to sort of jumpstart things. Could you talk about how important they are in changing the momentum of a game?
Well, I think coming off a power play or a penalty kill, you're right. Those Tomáš Nosek and Belly have obviously killed penalties for us, and they can they haven't necessarily played on the power play. So for us, coming back out with energy, and those guys, every time they get a shift, they're playing with energy. They're going the right direction. You know, for the majority of the time, they're playing in the offensive zone and giving teams problems there. And when Will Carrier was there, he was doing a great job. Stephen Matteau's come up and slid right into that spot and has become comfortable playing with those guys. But I think it's a real simple game. It's nothing flashy. It's winning their puck battles, reloading above the puck, and just working. And I think as a line that's been consistent for these first 26 games or so. It's been that line and those guys, and it's a credit to how they play and the professionalism they've brought to our group.
And looking at Brendan Leipzig, you talked about him playing with Alex Tuch, and I feel like that duo really seems to have some pretty good chemistry. But when it comes to Brendan Leipzig, he's doing a lot of really good things in the offensive zone, except he can't find the back of the net. What do you as a coach tell a player in that situation where they're getting a lot of really good looks and it's just a matter of time, but maybe if they're getting a little discouraged or a little frustrated that they're not actually scoring?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's as a player, I'm sure he's very frustrated with not having a goal. And yet, like you said, he is getting chances. He's creating chances. He's opening up space for his linemen, and he's being responsible defensively. So for us, we like where his game's going. We like how his game has been since he's been back in the lineup. And the message to him is just to remain positive and keep pushing here. We know he's going to score some big goals for us throughout the year. You know, it's magnified at the start of the year when you don't have one yet and there's a zero in that column. But, you know, we and as a staff and his teammates can see the energy and the tenacity that he plays with and the little plays that he makes to not only create chances for himself but for his linemates.
Towards the end of practice today, we saw Marc-Andre Fleury get onto the ice, and we know that you can't comment about his health or recovery time, and we're certainly not asking you to do so. But we would like you to comment on what it meant to have him step out onto the ice. You could sort of see the glow of the rest of his teammates seeing him out there, and what he means to the organization in the locker room, on the bus, and just having him around the facility.
Well, I think you just said it yourself. There's a glow. It's great to see a guy back. We're happy to see any player that's out for a period of time come back. And yet, with the stature that Marc-Andre has as a player and a person and his resume on playing and backstopping great teams in Pittsburgh is something that we can't get enough of here. And just happy to see him back out working his way back.
All right, thank you for your time, Ryan. We look forward to seeing you around the rink, and best of luck tomorrow against Anaheim.
Thanks, guys. All the best.
Take care. Right. Thank you. That was Ryan Craig, assistant coach for the Vegas Golden Knights, works with all the centers and the forwards, Ryan, and he's got to be pleased with the balance he was able to create on this unit.
And that's kind of what's been missing the last couple of games with David Perron out of the lineup, is that balance, is trying to find, and Will Carrier, I'm not going to gloss over that. Will Carrier's loss is a big one. However, Stephane Matteau has played very well recently, and that's a good thing going forward. But when you look at this team as a whole, we always used to say that their strength was winning the third and the fourth line battle. With David Perron out and trying to find the right combinations, on a couple of nights, they didn't win the third line battle. They, most specifically, the Dallas Stars. Radek Faksa is a third line player. His line is the third line on that team, and they were able to win that battle, and that's why the Golden Knights lost that game. So I think the way everything is lined up right now, at least last game, it got as close as possible to getting that balance without Perron and Carrier in the lineup.
We saw David Perron yesterday, Ryan, working with Marc-Andre Fleury, giving him some shots. So we saw him take the red jersey off today and was back to normal on practice. He was back with his line mates, Haula and Neal.
Yep.
What did you see out of him at practice today that says to you the return is imminent?
I think that if he's ready and he's close, he's going to be in. And it's really hard to say when you're talking about a guy with an upper body injury. We can assume that we know what the upper body injury is because of the play that happened that caused the injury. It was a blindside hit by Timo Meier that took David Perron out of that San Jose game. And so you can postulate, you can guess, you can say maybe there will be a setback if he takes the reins off and really goes full force in practice. But I thought he looked good today. He was moving around. He was having fun. And, you know, if he's ready to go and he's cleared for contact, he's going to be in the lineup. He's not going to be somebody that is going to be healthy and sitting in the press box. It's just not going to happen.
We saw Marc-Andre Fleury now a couple days in a row doing drills sort of after practice. Today he came out a little early, took some two-on-0s, took some penalty shots. Assessment of Marc-Andre Fleury.
It's too little to tell, to be honest. I mean, He even though he was on the ice with the team for just a little while, it wasn't anything like he was cleared to practice with the team or anything like that. I think they just got him onto the ice a little bit earlier. But, you know, in watching him, he's working on fundamentals. And that's one of the things that you're going to have to slowly work back into is going to be your movement inside the crease, not overcommitting, not overreacting. And, you know, Dave Pryor is going to really be working hard with Marc-Andre Fleury because he's missed a significant portion of time. And if he comes back into a game situation, you want him sharp. That's why they're working on the fundamentals right now. So when he's ready to go, he'll be able to see two-on-ones, three-on-twos, all that stuff, and understand where his angles are and how to play them.
And one of the beautiful things about Dave Pryor is that even with Marc-Andre Fleury coming back and that being a focus, that there was still all of the attention paid to Malcolm Subban and to Max Lagasse, and that didn't his presence didn't take away from the time that Dave Pryor commits to the other players.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of that is the way in which they stagger Marc-Andre Fleury's workouts and his time on the ice, and not to take away from the group practice and the time for Max Lagasse and you know, Malcolm Subban. But, you know, Dave Pryor, a lot of the Golden Knights' success this season falls heavily on what Dave Pryor has been able to do with the young goalies. And you talk about Coach of the Year, and I know that Dave Pryor can't win it as a goalie coach, but if there was ever a scenario where you might want to share that award, should Gerard Gallant win it, that would be one to share with Dave Pryor. I mean, his work has been phenomenal to start the season.
It certainly has, and you could just see the sort of smile on his face about how happy he was to have Marc-Andre Fleury back in between the pipes. We saw him, they said, after everyone else went off the ice, and you know, we did the press conference and came back out, and they were still working, but you could just see how much Dave Pryor enjoys the process.
Well, it's just reinforcement for guys like Malcolm Subban to watch Marc-Andre Fleury out there, a guy that's played and won three Stanley Cups, still working on the fundamentals. Still listening to what Dave Pryor says and putting that into action. It's huge, huge for the development of Malcolm Subban as well.
And he was certainly glued to everything that he was doing on his end of the ice today when they were taking those 2-on-0s and the penalty shots. Still more to get to here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. When we come back, we're going to hear from a couple of the players. We've got Alex Tuck. We've got Riley Smith. So stick with us. You're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley.
Colin Miller racing up the right side, feeds left, he's got Tuck into the zone, on the back end in front, he scores! Alex Tuck charging through the crease, backhand to forehand, he makes it 1-0 Golden Knights. Slides it right wing, back and forth, it's on goal, rebound, score! Marchessault, 2-1 Vegas! Goligoski comes in on the left side, glides to the middle, taps it away. Marchessault banks it ahead to himself. Marchessault comes into the zone. He feeds left and a shot. Score! Riley Smith! Vegas wins in overtime! Marchessault to Smith! Vegas wins it!
That was your game winner, Jonathan Marchessault, over to Riley Smith in overtime. Your Golden Knights with a 3-2 victory over the Arizona Coyotes, climbing to 4-0 over our neighbors to the south, and 8 points on the ledger just against the Coyotes.
Can you call it a rivalry if it's been this dominant?
Yeah, I guess.
No, you can't.
not yet. Maybe when they meet in the playoffs and have those playoff fights.
Maybe when Austin Matthews decides that he's done in Toronto and comes back home to Phoenix, then it'll be a rivalry.
Austin Matthews and Jason Zucker.
Well, that'd be kind of cool.
I
would love to see Jason Zucker play for the Golden Knights at some point.
Yeah, that'd be
great. I don't
know
if it's going to happen, but I'd like to see it.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like that. Let's work on that, Gary Bettman. Approve some trades. be fun to see.
The trade's got to be in the works, though. I mean,
that's true. And, you know, it'll be fun. It was fun to see Jason Zucker in Minnesota, but it'll be. You got to think it's going to be a special night for him to get to come home when they visit.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be one of those nights that he's going to lie and say that he wasn't thinking about it and didn't circle it on the calendar months ahead of time. But you know, it is. It's going to be one of those scenarios, and he can lie about it. That's fine. We won't believe him, but we know that it's going to hold special meaning for him to come back and play an NHL game in his hometown.
Are you suggesting that perhaps sometimes athletes aren't forthright?
Some of them aren't. I mean, I don't know. Jason Zucker seems like a guy that would give us a soundbite. I mean, there's a few guys that we know in the Golden Knights locker room that'll give us a soundbite, and one guy in particular that we're going to be talking to tomorrow that we hope can give us some gems, so to speak.
Yep. Yeah. Nate Schmidt, unfiltered. Look forward to that tomorrow. But today we had the opportunity to catch up with Riley Smith, who was a central figure in all of the things that happened yesterday leading to the win, including that game-winning goal. And he has really built a nice relationship, not just with Jonathan Marchessault, but with William Karlsson.
Yeah, and he's just one of those players that you know what you're going to get every single time he steps out onto the ice. And you know, the contract that he had in Florida didn't work economically for the Florida Panthers. And because of that, the Golden Knights were able to expose that a little bit and get Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith just to take the contract off of the Florida Panthers' hands. And we couldn't be more happy to take those two players from the Florida Panthers.
And they hooked up, as you just heard, on the game-winning goal. And we talked to Riley after practice today, and he reflected on last night's victory.
Yeah, it seemed like we created a lot of opportunities. It was a little different than most of the round 3s. It seemed like it was, run and gun. It seemed like there was a lot of offense and a lot of scoring opportunities. I don't think that's really how we want to play it, because I think Arizona had a couple good chances to score too. So, hopefully tighten it up next time we get that opportunity to play 3-on-3. But it was, fortunate that we were able to pick up 2 points out of it.
In overtime, obviously, line changes become very, very important. How locked in are you guys on the bench when it comes to line changes?
It's very important. It's tough 3-on-3 because, if you catch someone with a slow line change, it's a quick 2-on-1, and it's something you really have to be cognizant of is when other teams are changing, and when you get that opportunity, you got to make it count and make sure that you're not giving other teams odd man rushes.
What is it about your team in overtime that you're finding a lot of success? Obviously 4-0 at home in overtime. What is it about your team?
It seems like we're scoring when we're getting the opportunities. Also, our goalies are doing a great job standing on their heads in overtime. Especially you look at last night, and Phoenix definitely had a lot of good opportunities where they could have scored a couple goals, and Subs made some great saves.
We've gotten to the point now where the addition of William Karlsson to your unit is not new. How has that grown since day one?
I think chemistry grows every day. He's been a great fit playing with me and Marchie, and I think he's finally gotten this opportunity where he's able to play with a bigger role, and everyone's quickly seeing how good of a player he is and how smart he is with the puck.
And that was Riley Smith talking about his line mates, Jonathan Marchessault and Wild Bill Karlsson. And, when you look at that unit, Ryan, it's really kind of funny because there are three distinct personalities. And Marchessault is very sort of outgoing and gregarious and loud, if you will. And Will Karlsson is about as quiet and unassuming an individual as possible. And Riley Smith sort of splits the difference.
Yeah, I think Riley Smith is kind of the best of both worlds. He can, joke around when he needs to, but he's, for the most part, a pretty serious player. But, Jonathan Marchessault is kind of a lunatic when it comes to that kind of stuff. He's always making jokes. He's always laughing. He's always doing something on the ice, whether it's taking fake runs at guys or checking some people into the boards or whatever it is. He does that to lighten the mood. I asked him about it a couple of weeks ago, and he says, you don't ever take anything too seriously. And, a lot of people hearing that might say, oh, no, you need to take every game seriously because I'm a fan and I need to take every game seriously. But at the end of the day, it's really just sports, guys. So, Jonathan Marchessault, I think he's very self-aware when it comes to that stuff, and he likes to keep the levity on that line. And, when the game is on, Jonathan Marchessault is a very fierce competitor, and you see him taking runs at guys that are bigger than him, and he's a pretty feisty player, and that's something that, I don't think a lot of people knew going into this season, and you're starting to see it. He is not afraid to mix it up with anybody on the ice.
And I think that was the sort of reputation coming in, that he was a flash guy, but I think you're right. There's a lot of bulldog in him.
Yeah, and it comes from being a smaller guy, and you hear it all the time. You hear it with the Johnny Gaudreaus. You hear it with the Patrick Kanes. You hear it with these guys that are undersized, and everyone says they're never going to make it X, Y, or Z because they're too small. And they take that, and it's a chip on their shoulder. And Jonathan Marchessault is no different. He's a smaller guy, one of the smaller guys on this team. I think Brendan Leipzig's probably the only other guy that's about Jonathan Marchessault's size. But you wouldn't know it based on the way that those two guys play the game. They're not afraid of contact. They're not afraid to mix it up. And they almost thrive in that situation. You know, they like to get hit, and they like to hit, and they like to be involved in the game really any way that they can. And, you know, Jonathan Marchessault picks up goals in front of the net because that's where he's got to go to score goals. He's not afraid to shy away from that, from the hard to get to areas on the ice.
One fellow that size is not an issue is Alex Tuck, and he had a big game last night. Started off the scoring, picking up his sixth goal on an assist from Colin Miller and Cody Eakin, and Chris Chapman had the opportunity to catch up with him after last night's game.
No, yeah, I mean, he's a really really smart defenseman, puck-moving defenseman, offensive guy, and I mean, he plays really well defensively too, but he's really easy to be out there with, especially when he's making passes like that. I just had to be an option for him, and that's what I try to do, honestly, and he had a beautiful pass to me, and I was able to bury.
Wedgwood was really on his game tonight. Was there almost a feeling like, man, this is going to be really tough to beat him tonight?
Yes and no. I thought that when we got traffic and stuff, he wasn't seeing the puck that well. I thought we had a couple of opportunities where we just missed. And we, I mean, he's been playing well. He had a shutout last night, and he played again tonight. So I knew we knew one was probably going to go in because, I mean, back-to-back, 5 p.m. game, it's kind of tough, honestly, especially. And we've seen it in here. We've seen it against teams and stuff. So we just tried to pound as many pucks as possible. And I think we hit around 40-something shots. So I thought we did our job tonight offensively.
It seemed like this gritty win tonight. Can you just talk about, you know, is that the case? Was it a gritty win?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, that team over there has a lot of firepower. They're really young. I've seen them come from behind a lot and try to squeak out wins and stuff. And that was supposed to have what was happening in the first 10 games. I mean, there were a lot of one-goal games for them. And we know that every game, especially being a rivalry team, is going to be pretty tight. Especially with them getting more experience. But, I mean, in 2 seconds, they could have 2 goals on you because of how much fire between Domi and Keller and Fisher and guys like that. I mean, it could come from anywhere, from any line. And I think they're really deep, and they're going to be a good team growing in the future.
That was Alex Tuck after last night's game where he got the opening goal, his sixth of the season. And he had started that interview talking about his relationship with Colin Miller. And we talk an awful lot about line chemistry between forwards and between defensive pairs, but rarely between defensemen and forwards. But we have seen over the last few games when this team gets their offense going, it's because of transition. And oftentimes that's because of defensemen getting the puck out of the zone and moving up to offensive forwards and putting them in a good situation.
You know, it's funny that you say that because we should probably start getting used to it because it's not necessarily a group of three and a group of two. It's a group of five. And when you have Colin Miller and Nate Schmidt and Shea Theodore, guys that can really thread the needle as far as those long stretch passes go, you have a threat from really anywhere on the ice. If you can get somebody with time and space through the neutral zone and you've got a guy on the back end that can find them and thread that needle, you become a threat in all three zones, really. You threaten to attack from your own defensive end. So we need to start to think of that in terms of groups of five and not so much just groups of three and then two defensemen on the ice.
When you look at a guy like Colin Miller, he came in, we sort of knew he had a good shot and he was going to be good on the power play and that sort of thing. But he's a really good passer and he's a whole lot tougher than he gets credit for.
No, absolutely. And you know, Colin Miller is one of those guys that likes to shoot the puck and he likes to affect the game in an offensive role. But he's also very aware and cognizant of making smart defensive plays. There was a play last night where he saved a goal. Puck got behind Malcolm Subban. It would have been 2-1 Arizona at that point, and he jumped right in there, and he made the save on the goal line to prevent a goal. So you want your defensemen that are a little bit more offensively minded to still play defense, and that's what Colin Miller does. He's not going to make reads and jumps that are going to put his partner at risk, at least not on purpose.
One of the players he's going to get back is a fellow that likes a good stretch pass as much as the next guy, and that's David Perron. He loves to gain speed with the puck at the blue line, and he's getting close to returning. There's an opportunity to catch up with him after practice, and these were his thoughts on his injury and coming back.
Yeah, practice went well today. So it goes the rest of the day and keep moving forward. Don't need to make a decision about tomorrow today, but it went well.
Is that a possibility tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll talk with the doctors and everything, but shouldn't be too far out now. And I felt good today. I took some one-on-ones at the end of practice in the corner, feel the contact a little bit, get guys pushing me in the board, things like that, and felt pretty good.
What works between you, James, and Eric?
I think it's the combination of everything. I think Eric brings a lot of speed to our line. He helps push the guys back and gives a little bit more time for me to make plays. And Nealer, I think the other team needs to be aware of him so much out there on the ice. He finds those spots extremely well to get open and get shots off, and he doesn't need much time to do it. So for me, I'm trying to find times in the corner, find battles, finish my hits, kind of bring emotions to our line and to the team, and then I feel like once we're engaged physically, we have good games every night.
How important is that for a player to play with players that he fits with?
Yeah, it's huge. I think for us, we really clicked since the first game we played together, and hopefully they missed me a little bit, and I know that they've done a really good job working hard, these guys, and it was a big win last night, and I'm looking forward to get back.
When you initially got injured against San Jose, were you surprised you were out this long? Did you think it would be, you know, maybe miss Arizona?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about maybe even going to Arizona and then seeing how I went there. But I think we made the right decisions in the end. You always want to be on the safe side. And, it's not a for sure thing. Tomorrow we'll see. I don't know. It might not even be next game. There's no really – it's up to me when I decide I'm good to go, talking with the doctors and everything.
Were you hurt in the collision with Meyer, and what are your thoughts on kind of that whole play and how it all happened?
I just thought it was unnecessary for him to kind of lean his shoulder in. It wasn't like something that he went out of his way. Obviously, I kind of ran into him, and I get that part. But for me, when you see a guy who's vulnerable like I was, you just kind of try and like slow him down a little bit, or do anything you can to not get his head, not get the high part of the body kind of. And I thought he did the other way. I thought he kind of leaned his shoulder in, kind of for no reason for me. But I'll get over it.
That was David Perron talking about his injury and his return, and it looks like he will return soon, but perhaps not forgetting how he got there, which should make it interesting next time that he and the Sharks meet.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't know that Timo Meier wanted to hurt David Perron. I've seen plays like that happen where, you know, it's unfortunate. Perron's looking one way, Meyer's looking another way, and then they just happen to meet, and Perron gets the worst of it because he was, you know, caught off guard. But I don't know that Meyer was completely without blame on the play. I think what David Perron said is pretty accurate. It was reckless, and I don't think that it was necessary. But, you know, I think both players are kind of going to understand that they're a little bit at fault, and Perron's got to make sure that he's more aware when he's on the ice as well. But, you know, it's something that happens. And because of that, because David Perron had to sit, there was some juggling of the lines. Stefan Matteau has gotten to play a little bit more. Brendan Leipzig's gotten to play a little bit more. And you get a little bit more, you know, you get playing time for these guys that don't ordinarily draw into the lineup, or they draw in on a different assignment. So there's always silver linings. Obviously, with David Perron, we need him back in the lineup as soon as we can. So hopefully that's tomorrow night, and we'll see from there.
Clayton Hamilton, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Some news from around the rest of the league, though, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Ryan Johansson of the Nashville Predators is going to be out with an upper body injury. Nashville is 11-2-1 in their past 14 games. They face a red-hot Boston Bruins club, 6-1-0 in their past 7 tonight.
Well, that'll be an interesting game. That'll be fun.
And Yannick Weber is going to return to the lineup tonight, so they could certainly use him.
How many times do we see that, where one guy's out and then another guy comes in when another guy goes out? It's just so crazy, you know? injuries in the NHL. Go figure.
Yeah, but it should be a fun one tonight, though. Nashville and Boston, two teams, different conferences, don't see each other very often, but both streaking and both fun offensively and defensively.
You know, if this was on Wednesday, it'd be a Wednesday night rivalry game.
You know, and it could be, perhaps without the moniker, but, you know, this is one of those games that I would wish that NBCSN would fall all over, because it's a quality hockey game.
It is a quality hockey game, and, you know, it's not too early to start guessing as to who won the Matt Duchene trade. And I'm just saying, Kyle Turris has fit in swimmingly with the Nashville Predators. Matt Duchene, not so much with the Ottawa Senators.
And Kyle Turris, really the forgotten guy in that deal. He's not being talked about really anywhere. But
that's part of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of it. Kyle Turris just... he went to Nashville and he's chipping in offensively. I think he's got 8 points since he's joined the Predators. And Matt Duchene, I believe, has one goal.
Yeah,
for the Ottawa Senators, which is bad.
That is bad.
It's not very good.
And they're not winning. And they got waxed last night, 5-0 in Winnipeg.
That's
and
rough.
Winnipeg, as we are well aware, can score the puck. When we come back, we're going to take a look at an icon who's going to make an appearance on NHL ice. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton sitting in for Frank Harnish, along with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Chris Chapman behind the board. And fellas, this is probably something you'll both be interested in, perhaps Chris Chapman even more so than Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace. And that is because an icon is going to make a debut on NHL ice, and he's going to do so on the mask of Andrei Pavlik, backup goaltender of the New York Rangers, who is putting a portrait of none other than the boss himself, Bruce Springsteen, on the mask. He's also going to have images from the album cover The River and Born to Run, and a look of the New York City skyline from New Jersey's perspective. How do we feel about the boss getting in bed with the Rangers?
Well, if I turn my mic on here. Well, honestly, I think it's a little bit insulting, because let's be honest, the boss is from New Jersey, not from New York. So the guy should be looking at New Jersey, you know, maybe some Hoboken, Jersey City, Bayonne, from the New York side. But there's nothing good to see on that side, so I understand why.
But to be fair, Andrei Pavlik is from Kladno, Czech Republic, the hometown of Jaromír Jágr.
So why isn't Jágr on his helmet?
He should be putting a...
Or Dominik Hasek. Or what was there? Is there a great or Czech Lenka rock and
Lucia
roller?
He could put Lenka and Lucia on his helmet. That'd be classic as well.
I don't know.
How do you feel about it? Do you think Chapman's right? Do you think this injects the right amount of needed fire into the Devil Ranger rivalry that has gone a little soft as of late?
No, I don't. I don't think that anybody in those areas really care too much about that rivalry anymore. They haven't really met in the playoffs in a while. I don't think it really matters.
Well, and the last time they met in the playoffs, if I remember correctly, the Devils and Adam Henrique sent the Rangers home losers.
If you were going to have a music icon on your helmet, Ryan, who would it be? Would it be the Aquabats? Would it be someone
be
else?
No, it wouldn't. It would probably be David Gilmour of Pink Floyd. I think that would be my for sure. Like, that would be the number one on mine, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
You know, can't go wrong with Pink Floyd. When people always have that Rolling Stones Beatles debate, my answer is always, I think Pink Floyd is the quintessential band of my lifetime.
Yeah, they're my top one all time favorite band. Mm-hmm. So
would you have like The Wall, like the album, or the one with the guy on fire shaking hands? That's a good one. Animals.
Wish You Were Here is a good one. The flying pig is kind of cool. There's a lot of great imagery from that band. I would probably just turn it into a Pink Floyd mask.
Dark Side of the Moon.
But I would definitely highlight David Gilmour, because, I mean, guitar solos. Like, let's be real.
He's awesome. Yeah.
He turned his guitar into a squealing pig. Like, let's all just remember that that's what David Gilmour did to us. It's great.
Nice.
I love him.
Well, I would go with a more Rastafarian theme. I am a big reggae music guy. So. Yeah.
So you wouldn't go with The Boss?
No, I would not. I would probably go with Bob Marley or Peter Tosh, something along those lines. You know, maybe the lion that they have on the reggae albums. Yeah.
You know what the greatest thing about the New Jersey Devil New York Ranger rivalry now is, you guys get to argue over who took the Los Angeles Kings to more games in the Stanley Cup Finals before losing.
Yeah, that's, and as you say that with a very big smile on your face.
I do. Yes. Yes,
and,
I do.
And you know what though? The Devils did attempt to prolong the Ducks from receiving a Stanley Cup. Unfortunately, the following time they went back, they were able to get one ahead of the Kings. But the Devils did their part there.
Yeah, you know, they did okay.
I got to get back to your reggae mask here for just a second. Two questions. One, like, who's the guy in Vancouver, right, that has the ears? That so it looks like...
Oh, it's Markstrom.
Markstrom, right.
Yep.
So he's got the ears, right? Would you have some dreads?
That's what I was thinking.
Like on
the
back? And would it, even if it didn't fit your color scheme, would you still go with the black and the green and the yellow somewhere? Even if you were a New Jersey Devil?
Yes. I think you have to. If that's the theme you're going with, you have to go there. You have to have the reggae Rastafari colors. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe an image of some dreadlocks or Bob Marley, you know, that'd be kind of cool.
But would it be like a one-off? You know how the Devils wear the green pants. On St. Patrick's Day, would it be a one-off then, so that you can get the green to match with the color?
I would wear the mask every day. It would always...
So it's just anarchy. You don't care about matching at all.
No. See, the nice thing about red and black, they kind of go with a lot already. As the Devils, they wear red and black, so I'd be set. You know, throw a little green in, although a different shade of green. I still think that's okay.
Excellent.
I don't know about the yellow.
Yeah, I don't know. I like yellow's my favorite color, but it would have to depend on.
I would not have expected that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know, really.
It's so bright and
it is
happy.
And yellow. It is
like Big Bird.
It's just
I
not...
am. That's me.
Big Bird.
No, bright and happy. I'm extraordinarily happy.
The sunniest guy I know.
I really am.
That sounds like a career.
We all had an amazing time at skate this morning. I mean, there was. Some things that happened in the first 5 minutes that were phenomenal. Go to my Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy to see what I'm talking about.
Yes, go to Ryan Hockey Guy. Check it out. It's also posted up at @Clayton_JoeFan. So so follow us both. And
it involves Nate Schmidt's helmet.
See what you missed at practice today. And this is why folks should get up, go to City National, always enjoy practice. Say hello to Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, to Chris Chapman, to myself. We are always up there. Enjoy the practice. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Ducks are on the docket. 7 o'clock, 6:30 pregame. We will be around for that. Stick around here, though. T.C. Martin, his show, The Doctor, is next.